It's time for Lunch Hour Reviews.
He was licking me!
Lunch Hour Reviews.
Man, I ate till he burst.
You eating Jadis!
Speeding time.
Welcome back, listeners. We are here back in Mindy's living room, joined by Charles and Sean of Miskatonic Musings. Hey, guys.
Hey, man. How you guys doing?
It's a tri-state trifecta here. We got New York, Massachusetts, and Ohio here.
Okay. Well, when people... All right. I'm not going to nitpick about which tri-state, but yeah.
Actually, it's three states.
There are three states. So it's a tri-state.
Thank you.
Not the tri-state area, though.
No.
In writing up my notes, listener, today we're going to be talking about Gerald's Game, relatively new to Netflix, made for Netflix by Mike Flanagan, and there's a story component that circles around the solar eclipse and then the anniversary of the solar eclipse, and I was looking at the map and thinking Charles is the closest of all of us to the path of totality. Did you get out to see the...
I missed most of it. I was on a plane during the solar eclipse. I was coming back from Necronomicon Providence. I got to see a little bit of the tail end on the drive home.
I got to see it. I stared at it with special sunglasses.
We had made boxes. I had made a box, and you did too.
I made a small box out of like a macaroni craft. That's what I did. Box, but
my
mine wasn't big enough to work.
My girlfriend actually bought me sunglasses from NASA. I was like, well, I didn't expect she was going to. And then the day of, she's like, oh, I got these sunglasses from NASA. I'm like, oh, all right, that's today. So she was on top of it.
Those glasses are amazing.
I know,
you could just stare at the sun, which felt really... stupid, but
felt really good.
Seems really unsafe.
It's so powerful. After like 5 or 10 minutes,
a guy in the it still hurt.
I didn't look
still
that
hurts.
Long, I guess.
Like, you're
did you get the
blue
light glasses?
No one talks about that, but even with the glasses, you got to sit through the burn. A guy saw me in the street with my shitty little box.
Yeah,
and
he felt
offered
sorry.
Me his glasses to get a look at it. So that was the only like good look I got was the charity of another guy taking pity on my.
People were very nice
box.
Outside during the eclipse.
Yeah,
everyone was sharing their little like boxes.
It was New Yorkers never talk to each other, mm-mm. But on this day, like outside, like we recorded that day, so I was here in Midtown, and just a bunch of people holding up boxes to the sun.
On that day, we were all Midwesterners, friendly and affable.
How many people do you think were like, we should rob a bank during the eclipse?
It's probably not a bad idea. Yeah. While everybody's looking up, you're like, it's like pickpocketing.
He's just like, like, all right.
This is going to be good for us, Jess. Really good.
That's a marriage, isn't it? Working on the difficult things.
For better or worse.
Let's go in. Get comfy.
So, we're going to be talking about Gerald's Game. Mike Flanagan, who everybody probably knows from Hush, also for Netflix. He did the sequel to the Ouija board movie.
Mm-hmm. Which I heard was surprisingly good.
I heard the same. I haven't seen it, though.
I can't. I can't go through that heartbreak.
You'd have to watch the first one.
Exactly.
Wait, but do you
It's a prequel, though.
It's a prequel.
Oh. Yeah.
Like, I'm convinced at this point that Mike Flanagan can do no wrong. Like, Absentia, Oculus, Hush, and now this. I've liked every movie of his that I've seen.
I didn't like Oculus.
No?
You should give it another shot. I really liked it.
I know you did.
Yeah.
He did this one with, I think it was him, he did one with Tom Jane that I wasn't really thrilled with.
Before I Wake, I didn't see that one.
Yeah, that was from last year. That, went under the radar for me. I didn't know about it until I started
looking
his
stuff
up. Is it?
I wanted to like it so much. I was like, "Cool, another Mike Flanagan."
And he can do like, some wrong then. Okay,
yeah, he can do a
good to know.
Wrong.
I was impressed that he also edits his movies. Like all the ones that we know, he also edited. Huh. So,
nice.
Kind of an auteur. In this case, the original story is by Stephen King, with screenplay by Mike Flanagan and his writing partner Jeff Howard. We've got the cast. Of Carla Gugino, who everybody knows from Son-in-Law, right?
Exactly. I was hoping that you weren't going to name some other movie, because clearly everyone knows her through Son-in-Law.
Son-in-Law, Watchmen.
Of course.
Sin City. Yeah, I mean, she's Carla Gugino. She was in San Andreas, which I sat through for Rachel's sake. She loves The Rock.
Oh, I don't even know what
well,
that
Well, who
is.
Doesn't love The Rock?
Also, we've got Bruce Greenwood, yeah. who Captain Pike from the new Star Trek movies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's been in a bunch of stuff. He's a good-looking older guy.
He's fit as hell.
Yeah. Right? He's looking good for 61.
Six-pack going.
Yeah, for a guy, is it not easy to do? All right, we've also got, let's see, Henry Thomas, Elliot from E.T., plays Carla Gugino's dad in flashbacks.
And I couldn't figure it out, and I had to, it was one of those where I'm IMDBing while I'm watching the show. I'm like, I know this guy, I know it's not Gage, you know, but I knew it was one of those kid actors turned adult.
Like Gage. Yeah, like a grown-up Gage.
I kept thinking it was Eric Bana, just on and off.
Oh,
like,
I could see that.
He's aged pretty nicely.
Like a fine,
which is a weird thing to say about a child actor. Now that I'm hearing that back,
we're also joined by one of the peculiar. Well, okay, so 7 foot tall, Carl Struyken.
I love your reading styles.
He's from the Netherlands. Well, I don't. Yeah, he's Scandinavian.
Mr. Hom from Next Gen, Luoxana Troy's assistant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that. I didn't remember his character. I know him as Lurch from the Addams Family movies, and he's got that small cameo in Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's someone who's got acromegaly, which actually does come up in the movie, and that causes an enlargement of the hands, feet, and forehead, and chin, apparently. But,
nice.
Yeah, I was
thinking, think he's kind of great, though.
He is. Do you feel like he's kind of in an Elephant Man situation as far as like being typecast to weird roles? Because like no one is hiring him to like sit in an office desk.
Yeah.
That would be great.
I think he'd be great as like a bartender. Just
it would
as,
be
like,
funny in an office because he would sit over the cubicle.
You're not real.
Officer!
You're only made of moonlight.
Do we want to go around? If I had to guess, I think we all probably liked it.
I liked it. Yeah, I was afraid you hated it when you were being like cagey in the texting. So,
John Cagey. I loved it. I haven't had this strong a reaction to a movie in a long time.
What do you guys think, Charles? You first.
My reaction upon finishing it was basically, you know, hell of a movie for you guys to have us come on and make jokes about this. Intense character study about a woman's trauma.
Yeah.
Like, how are we going to make laughs about about the eclipse there?
Well, shit. We were hoping you would take care of that part.
We'll have to, like, tangentially make jokes. It can't be direct.
Right. And we're never making jokes at the expense of a survivor of,
we can make
now you're making
jokes.
It weird.
We can do dog jokes.
There we go.
All right.
There you go.
Yeah, I jerk off with that dog on my lap.
During an eclipse?
Well.
I was trying to avoid that. I think you misinterpreted what I was trying to do with the dog.
Did I not follow the line on that one? All right. My bad. We'll do a second take.
No, it's fine.
No, I think I like that take.
Okay, so lastly, filling out the cast, we've got Kate Siegel from Hush, who I guess is now Mrs. Mike Flanagan. Why are you covering your face?
Because
right?
I'm still thinking about the dog.
Oh. I'm sorry.
I guess we didn't really talk about it up front, but we were going to call this episode a lunch hour review and you know joke that we're coming from Southeast Asia. But yeah, it's late and I think we're all a little punchy and that's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit. A little drinky.
So I think by the time the opening credits show us the title card that it's Gerald's game, we get the handcuffs going into the travel bag.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. I know the story from you guys. I think Sean, you were on the show when you and Mindy nerded out over Stephen King stuff and Gerald's game for a story with a pretty like stripped down plot, like still pretty effective. So, I don't know, Charles. Are you and I? Have you read the book?
My King reading does not include this one, unfortunately. So, you're on your own, Sean.
Yeah, Gerald's Game is a great book.
It's a really good book. Like, You wouldn't, if you described it to someone, you're like, it's somebody whose husband dies who's trapped on a bed. It doesn't sound good.
No.
But like, but it's really good.
That's why I was confused how they're even going to make this movie.
Yeah, because it's basically her in just inside her head, like the whole book. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, when they announced it and that Mike Flanagan was attached, like it bears some similarities in terms of like simplicity with Hush. Mm-hmm. So yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, and Mike Flanagan, I mean, at this point, like he's, well, I guess we talked about the movie that he did last year that didn't really go over great, but otherwise his batting average is great.
Yeah.
And yeah, this I thought was no different. This was really effective. And for what it is, it's actually like an hour and 45 minutes, which I thought that might be stretching it a little bit.
But I feel like every bit was kind of needed.
Yeah. I never
got maybe
bored.
Not some of the ending.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, that's from the book, though.
Yeah, I didn't mind the ending.
Stephen King always kind of whiffs the ending, and I could tell that was definitely still Stephen King. That wasn't their, like, fixed ending.
I like the ending.
I like the ending. What's wrong with
I
the ending?
I liked it, but it was so, like, tonally different, like, going in and, like, well, all this stuff, you know, set that aside for a second. Let's talk about how the Moonlight Man's this real person who's been grave robbing and raping and killing and taking trophies for a decade.
But, like, that's the best part, because you think, like, oh.
She's imagining it, but she's
right,
not.
And she's not.
Yeah, he's real. And? Like, I love it. Yeah, like, because then you also think, like, maybe he did kind of take a little nibble on those toes, too. Maybe it wasn't just the dog.
Oh, gross. Okay. All right. Well, we're jumping way ahead.
Yeah, a little bit.
We're going full spoilers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, well,
I mean, it's hard not to.
I hope so after I just revealed that bit.
It's like the first 5 minutes when the biggest thing in the movie happens, so.
Yeah, I think it
so,
or,
yeah,
like, the first trailer. 10. Yeah.
God, how do we get so wrong? We were happy once, weren't we?
Gerald?
What?
What's happening? Oh. Gerald! Rico. Just Rico. It's time to wake up, honey.
So we see these two going out to this remote house. We see the handcuffs right away, kind of phoning in what we're in for, but if you're watching Gerald's Game, I think you freaking know the plot. And he's much nicer in this. I feel like he was much
nicer
than in the book.
Really?
The book, he was a real shithead.
Yeah.
Huh. I thought he was a pretty big shithead in this.
Didn't you think he was nicer, Sean?
He was, but also in the book, he gets, like, kicked in the junk.
Yes.
And then he has a heart attack. So it's, like, a very different dynamic. I thought it was a little better to have it be, like, a Viagra-based heart attack. Because, like, that's like, oh, no, like, tragic, sort of.
Yeah.
I don't know. But he still was, like, he was, like, awful enough that it, like, got the character across.
Yeah, I just liked him being really awful in the book. He was just much nicer in this one. And, like, when he bonks his noggin, I felt like, oh, that's too bad a little.
Really? In the book, did they go into, like, what he did for a living that he was so, like, obviously rich? Because that was interesting.
I think he's a lawyer. I can't remember. Businessman or a lawyer, I think.
Yeah, I don't remember what he did. He's much older than her.
Yeah.
And so you just think he's older and he has money.
Yeah. In this case, they're at a lake house that, at first glance, it kind of looks like, I don't know, Castle Rock in the summer. But I guess it was shot in Alabama and supposed to be, like, Alabama.
Which, oh, really?
No one had an accent.
I didn't know that.
It's a, I don't know, vacation summer home in Alabama. Not everybody has
it
those.
It was supposed to be Maine, but they didn't specifically say Maine. So
yeah, I get the handcuffs thing struck me as like this guy didn't even do a Google search. Like he was just he probably ordered the handcuffs online, but just as far as like I'm gonna surprise my wife with some BDSM. And you go straight to the police issue handcuffs. Like, well, that's pretty aggressive.
He's a rich
asshole. I thought they kind of had discussed this, though. Like, it's not like this was a surprise.
Wasn't it, though?
She knew they were going to do something. She didn't know the extent, I don't think.
I think handcuffs were a surprise. She agreed to do, like, something new, but...
But I figured he got the fancy handcuffs because he's a rich asshole and just, like, bought the most expensive thing he could find in terms of... sex toy.
I'm sure there's more expensive handcuffs that like let you get out of them, you know, like if you're like, oh, let me just like the real message of this movie is if you're going to do like BDSM handcuff stuff, make sure you can get out of the handcuffs if things go wrong.
The real, real message is never explore your kinks.
Yes. It worked well for Jeffrey Dahmer.
So on their way to the lake house, which fancy neighborhood, except he seems to think it's overrun with stray dogs because they find one in the middle
of
the street.
There's one dog.
Yeah, one dog.
Eating a possum, right?
Yeah.
That's what was in the middle of the road. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know. As all things Mike Flanagan, like, this is going to come back in this story, isn't it? I actually like the subtlety that all the things that do come up are presented. They're not really, you know, you never get like a cut to close up of like the price tag from her slip,
right,
or the glass, mm-hmm, of water or any of that stuff. It's just kind of like, it's there for the people paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
And admittedly, I took two times to watch the movie to notice those, those things. I mean, I saw them as she started implementing them, but
yeah,
I picked up on it the second time around. So you mentioned that Gerald does get down with the Viagra pretty quick while Jesse cuts up the Kobe steak for the dog, because it's clearly, it's willing to eat possum, and that's a pretty hungry dog.
Yeah,
that steak looked amazing.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
Throughout this story, meat plays a big role. I wrote, it's kind of symbolic.
Various kinds of meat.
Yeah, Jesse is very kind, and so she generously gives away the steak while Gerald is trying to turn his into a weapon.
Yes.
You're the worst.
Is that what you think Viagra does to a penis?
Well, the way he describes
it.
Listen, yeah. I've seen Rape Zombie, and I can tell you it can be weaponized.
Does Viagra doesn't play a part in those Japanese movies, does it?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
In the second one, they talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's two?
You guys got to... There's four Rape Zombies.
Oh,
God. You guys really need to watch them.
No one needs to watch them.
Watch them with the headphones.
But anyway, meat is definitely murder in Rape Zombie.
Did you produce this movie? Like, you're throwing a lot of plugs out there for Rape Zombie.
And we got an Indiegogo for podcast, Rape Zombie
you really
5.
Have.
I know. It's like I talk about Rape Zombie and Ice Cream Man and nothing much else.
That's a little concerning.
Which one was Ice Cream
Man? That was the Clint Howard one.
Yeah, it's like an absurdist horror. It's very high art.
That's giving it a lot of credit. Yeah, it's not exactly Pee-wee's Playhouse.
But, anyway, back on track.
Right, so this is Gerald's solution to their... It sounds like it's been months since they've had sex. It's been even longer since they've had a serious conversation. And he's going
to
solve
this. So just go straight to the handcuffs, yeah.
Right to bondage. It did. Okay, so if there is a Hollywood component to this movie, it is that they are both in extraordinarily good shape. They knew they were going to spend this movie half naked. And
oh, yeah, like in the book, I'm pretty sure it specifies he has like a gut and he's like not in shape. So when he has a heart attack, you're not that shocked.
Yeah, because this guy looks like he runs like a gazillion miles a day. I don't know what's a lot because
yeah,
I don't
like
run.
Only
but...
drinks green juice and doesn't like has like 5% body fat. Like, yeah, Greenwood really... He worked on himself for this one.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, I guess I read about this in Stephen King's On Writing. He talks about, I think it was Joe Hill, who he tied up to the bed. I mean, he asked him to be a volunteer, but
yes,
he was like roughly
fully
the same
clothed
size. Yeah. No eclipse that day.
Oh, no.
But he ties him up to the bedposts, and that's when his wife comes home to find... You know, Stephen King sort of encouraging his boy, like, try and get out.
He's like, try to get over the back. Yeah.
So Gerald handcuffs her to the bedpost and climbs on top of her. And when she's not interested, Gerald reveals just how bad a communicator he really is. And kind of starts without consent. And it starts going there. And then it gets really creepy. Yeah, I don't know. This is a weird... You're right. This is a weird movie to have a group conversation about.
It's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Well, it's a fine movie to have a group conversation about, just not with us.
I think it'll get easier once he kicks the bucket.
Well, but then we talk about the dad.
Yeah.
But, okay, so when he gets... very aggro. She bites his lip. That's kind of the first marker that, like, she's not down for this.
Yes.
And, then,
well, that's not clearly, the first. She's been,
She's been clearly like, maybe I'll try this out. Like, I'm not really thrilled about this. She becomes progressively less thrilled about it as things go.
So later in the story, we find out that Gerald, I guess consistent with the book that Gerald was a big heart attack risk. And for a guy, like, you're not supposed to be on Viagra if your heart's going to be an issue. So that's, I will say, as far as, like, heart attack acting, he was pretty convincing.
Yeah, that was nice and creepy. But then I thought to myself, so then he's on top of her, and she kind of, like, pushes him off, his dead body off, which I think would be very difficult.
No, your legs are pretty strong.
With just, like, your body?
Yeah, it's pretty tough to push another person off of you.
Because it's mostly, like, elbow arm stuff you're using.
Yeah, and he's all dead weight at that point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. It doesn't seem, like, it seems like at first, like, she thinks he's fucking with her and just trying to get his way. Until she does kick him off and she hears the sound of dead meat hitting the ground.
And then his head smacking the ground.
Yeah.
And so then I'm thinking, could he have been saved, or was he already just dead? Or did she actually kill him by smacking his head on the ground?
I don't think he would have broken his head. Like, the bed wasn't all that high.
It's blood everywhere. Yeah, where's that blood coming from? His noggin.
I think he was dead before he hit the ground.
Yeah, I think it was supposed to be one of those, like, heart attack dead things.
I feel like his priapism burst upon landing on the ground, and that's where the blood
that's where the blood was coming from. That's gross. And I regret saying that instantly.
You know that's what the dog ate off first, though.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I guess he was probably, yeah, that douchebag was probably wearing, like, silk boxers.
He had some nice underwear on. That looked comfy. And I don't like the tight underwear, but that looked good.
It looked great to die in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Real luxurious when you conk your head on the bed and get eaten by a dog.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. So, speaking to it, the dog comes in because she left the front door open. If there's a single thing I have to call bullshit on in this movie is that they walked into the house and she kind of looks at the door like, I should have closed that.
Yeah. Are you born in a barn? Like, what the hell?
Yeah. That's, yeah. You take 2 seconds. Like, what is closing the door going to spoil the mood? Like,
and also, we heard on the radio that there's been someone breaking into houses in the area.
Yeah.
We know that. And yet there's the door wide open so Moonlight Man could come and lick your fucking toes in the middle of the night.
And now that dog is outside and it's got a taste for fancy meat.
Yes.
Hey, if the door's left open and unlocked, no one can really break in. So.
So none of this was illegal. Midnight Man.
Technically.
Moonlight Man, whatever the shit his name is.
Yeah, I mean, well, he didn't. What?
He was like, wow, look at my luck. The door's just open.
The law says.
I'd like to think he went through their very expensive fridge too and ate some of their like really expensive like foie gras or whatever.
Wouldn't that have been creepy? Like you're stuck on the bed in one room and you can hear someone going through your kitchen making
shit.
He comes
in with a plate of all your food.
You can pull till your wrists break. You're not getting out of those cuffs.
You're not real. You're not real.
Okay, so shortly after this, like, she kind of shooes away the dog from trying to eat Gerald. Okay, so I don't have any pets. I didn't grow up with pets, but I thought kind of eating dead owners or whatnot is more of a cat thing. But that's a... Dogs would go for that?
I don't know. I think
like,
a dog would.
Warm.
I think they would wait. I mean, but he was very hungry. He was a very hungry dog.
Yeah, and he might have gotten rabies maybe from... No, I guess if he got rabies, he would have gone after her. I'm just thinking, if you eat a possum in the middle of the street, like, something's off.
No,
it's like seeing a raccoon in the daytime.
No, dogs do that.
Something's
wrong. No, that dog doesn't have rabies. He's, like, fine. He's just very hungry.
Dogs love to eat, like, roadkill
stuff.
Yeah,
they eat all sorts of gross shit all the time. Murphy sometimes will eat his own poop. So, like, let's be serious.
Nice.
Are you really nicing that?
Yeah.
You're down with coprophagia?
Yeah.
So they'll eat anything, but I think they would wait until like a couple days before the body to start eating him.
Well, then the meat's going to go bad.
Dogs don't know. Do dogs know that? I don't think so.
Do dogs care?
Well, I don't think dogs care either is the more important thing.
Yeah, I guess if you're eating poop, you're not really the most discerning.
You're not that much
palate.
Of a connoisseur.
That's true. Kobe steak, poop, same thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so do we, I guess... You having read the book, you would have more insight. At first, you're not sure if she's jumped straight to hallucination or if this is inner monologue at play. But Gerald, you know, gets up kind of cranky and you kind of get a moment of like, oh, good. Things are maybe going to be okay. No, then not at all. Not at all. But it's definitely inner monologue, right? She isn't seeing these characters in the room with her.
So Stephen King always does this weird inner monologue stuff. like his file cabinets that he has in some of his movies and things like where they go into their mind and like do all this shit.
Oh, like Dreamcatcher.
So I think she's just like in her mind.
Yeah, it's in her mind.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. On that note, I like that Gerald kind of represented the self-doubting, cynical, you're going to fail kind of, you know, anybody with self-esteem issues knows what that feels like. And then when she sees herself, that's kind of like the optimistic, pragmatic problem solver. Like, let's figure this out. Let's try and survive this. And yeah, I don't know. I dug that. That sort of is an effective way of like opening up the story.
I was glad that he found a device that actually worked, because one of the big things I was worried about was he was going to try something and it was just going to be like, ugh, sucks.
Yeah.
You know, like it ruins the book somehow.
But he's good with that. But Flanagan's really good with that, because even in Hush, when she's going through all the different endings for her book, it doesn't ever feel like shitty. You know, it feels like plausible. And so I enjoyed how this was brought out.
Yeah. In Hush, it's especially cool because at first you don't know that's what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so when whatever decision she makes have permanent consequences, you're kind of like, oh shit, I guess that's the end of the movie. But then, yeah, you just see that these are all theoretical scenarios that she's working through.
Speaking of Hush and her writing a book, a neat little bit of trivia I found was that when Carla Gugino's character throws a book at the dog, that is the book that the main character in Hush wrote.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I saw that. That's a nice nod. My friend is building himself a universe. I like that. Okay, so the first time she falls asleep, we get the sort of flashback dream to the last solar eclipse when she was a kid. And it's a timely subplot. About a month ago, we had the solar eclipse that we would... I guess, was that on pre-roll, or did we talk about that on the... Okay. We spent some time talking about the solar eclipse. And
it was on a roll somewhere.
At some point.
To see it from. Yeah. It was the day we were all pretty sure the president was going to go blind for staring at the sun.
Yeah. It was. You know, they told him not to, and you should never tell him don't do something.
So many people told him not to, too.
It's like oppositional defiance.
Yeah. Well, sadly, this far along, we know that he hasn't gone blind or... You know what? He's been walking out of rooms without doing things. Trump has said Melania wishes she could be here.
When she's literally right there, maybe he can't see her.
I'm starting to think maybe that's the case. He did burn out his the cones, the ocular cones.
I just think he has early dementia. I think that's what that is.
I do too. Could be he forgot what she looked like
because of his Alzheimer's.
Yeah, I like the new conspiracy.
We lived through Reagan, you know.
I guess the new conspiracy.
That's true. Actually,
Melania has a double.
I enjoy that conspiracy theory a great deal.
That was my second favorite thing on Twitter that day. First was Ted Cruz tweeting out the Zodiac note,
which he actually did. Which
was that him legitimately doing? I thought his thing got hacked or something.
That was the porn.
That was
and now he's on a roll because he said "Curb Your Enthusiasm" to Bernie. So now he's like, he thinks he's on a roll. He's that guy in the room who thinks they're really funny right now.
Yeah, that's the guy you just walk away from and you're like, don't encourage him. Don't encourage him.
Sean, are they subtweeting us right now?
What?
Are they talking about us?
You guys? Know. No. What?
I'm making a joke.
Was it a joke? Because you can't say that, because then I'm going to check my Twitter and be like, are they tweeting at the same time?
This is how we pass.
I was using the colloquial subtweet to mean to talk about us without saying our names,
like a live tweet of the live podcast.
Oh, Jesus Christ! That joke didn't land and proved my point in one swipe.
All right. I'm still so confused.
And they could be subtweeting us in theory.
All right, let's.
I can't see Darren's hand. He could be.
Well, the dog's on his lap, so he could be jacking off right now.
Sure.
I'm glad we found levity. This is good.
So yeah, so I guess up to that point, Gerald calls her Mouse, right? And because he is her inner monologue, she is referencing that to her father and her relationship with her father, which we get in the first like flashback dream sequence. I will say she dreams pretty vividly, and
she's kind of like in panic mode.
I'm surprised she got as much sleep as she did in this story. Like the sort of acts are kind of broken up with her naps. I mean, it's all like flashback. She wakes up,
gets some shit done for the day.
Yeah, there's a creepy guy in the corner.
I think you get burnt out on like shock like the adrenaline probably surges out and you just get exhausted.
Yeah, you crash.
Like in that kind of a scenario, like you think you're going to die, it's probably like hours of like, oh my God. And then you're just like.
Yeah. Gerald talks. Well, actually, no, it's her talking to herself where that mentions that the adrenaline spike mm-hmm. usually follows yeah. with the crash. But so in that first flashback, we get her as a little kid and the family's at a very similar house on the lake. Dad, what, was going to take out the kids on a speedboat, but instead leaves it to the pregnant mom to take the kids
yeah,
out?
Yeah, because the pregnant mom's also kind of a bitch. And, like, doesn't like her own kid.
Yeah, everybody's yeah. pretty dissatisfied, it yeah. seems. Like, this is not a happy household.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, but so...
Two would not have child again.
yeah.
Is that out of 10 or out of 5?
Out of 10.
Oh, okay.
She's very not satisfied all right, with all right. that child.
well, that's why she had
but,
so many
know,
more.
I mean, you also don't get to see how many, like, weird things have happened with the dad and her that maybe the mom caught.
Yeah.
Like, as... It's going to be evident pretty soon. There's some weirdness going on.
Yeah. When Jesse and her dad stay behind. I don't remember why they...
Because she don't want to go on the boat. Jesse don't want to go on the boat.
Yeah.
She's being very difficult.
I bet she wishes she had gone on that boat.
very disagreeable.
Yeah. But, okay. So, yes. The thing we're kind of dancing around is that her dad...
Yeah.
I mean, he masturbated with her on his lap, and that is like a horrible thing to subject someone to. And then I thought worse, and it comes in the later dream when he sort of puts the guilt trip on her.
That's like crazy. Yeah, that's a crazy scene.
Yeah, it's incredibly well written because it's creepy to think of it as like progressing as an organic conversation, but when he sort of plants the seeds that mom's going to be really upset, you don't want mom to be upset.
She already doesn't like you very much.
and then turning it into her keeping the secret mm-hmm. and like begging him to keep the secret, that was fucking dark. Like mm-hmm. that is creepy.
Well, I mean, that's like pretty consistent with from the cases I've read, like, that's a pretty consistent thing. They're like, you can't tell anybody because then we'll both get in trouble.
Yeah, you don't want to be the reason this family breaks
up. It's so manipulative.
Right.
Yeah,
that's pretty fucked up. I think it's that...
It is.
Is it that dream? I think it's the first dream that she comes out of and the Moonlight Man is in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. that, I mean, that guy's...
He's got his bag of bones and jewels.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, it's a striking figure. He was kind of like a bald Babadook just mm-hmm. in the corner.
Yeah. I love it in the book. Yeah, it's so scary in the
book. I love it because it's, yeah, like you said. Like, I almost, the one thing I was kind of like, is when you actually, like, he's so creepy, but he was creepier in the book because, mm-hmm. like, I don't know, I just pictured something different.
Yeah, I guess I did. I didn't picture him to be so, like, glowing white. He's just like this, like dark, like shade kind of creature, man.
Okay.
And
I pictured him being like slightly more normal looking, almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think anybody ever sees Carl Straken coming, and yeah, there he is, just in the corner. It was so much worse when he's licking her toes after that.
Yeah, because I don't think he really licks her toes. I think it's the dog, but maybe it was him. And it reminds me of that humans can lick too urban legend.
I don't know that urban legend.
Yeah.
And she's on the bed and she puts her hand down and her dog licks her hand. She knows her dog's there or whatever. And then she goes and then she finds out the dog is dead, but who's been licking her hand. And it's and on the mirror it says, humans can lick too. it's like one of the grossest urban legends ever.
I know. Also, interesting side note, sometimes how I do foreplay.
Just hide right under the bed.
Start at the toes.
I hide under the bed. That's the first step.
Well, we all know that that's not possible. It's impossible to get under the bed.
Getting under the bed.
No, it isn't. We've proven this.
I do want to say that I don't think Carl Straken looks like that weird without the makeup on. Like,
but he's huge. He's like he's 7 foot tall.
Yeah, they it's more like in his the court size, scene. They definitely morphed out his head. They gave him some pretty peculiar sort of. Elephant Man style, like extensions to his head.
Yeah, like I guess in the book, I pictured him like more of a average height, like almost more of a like an everyman kind of hallucination, where it's just like a really relatively normal sized person.
I always thought he was big, like big and but wider like rather than taller.
I might be.
I don't know, but that's a thing you can imagine it how you
big and moon-like. Yeah, yeah.
So long as he's made of moonlight, which
the main thing is, he's stealing bones.
Yeah, that's what when he tips his little bag to like so you can look into his bag of bones and stuff. It's kind of like, what you got there, buddy? What you got? Neat.
Yeah, there are a couple Stephen King references. I think when Gerald appears, they start talking about dreams, which I guess it's in the IMDb trivia, but she describes the woman in red standing over the well, and that's from Dolores Claiborne. I don't know. I just know the movie.
Yeah, there's a tie-in in the book. Bates.
Oh, okay. So same actual character.
Yeah.
I was surprised they left that bit in. Like, yeah, a lot of times when they make Stephen King movies, they cut out, like, the really explicit references that don't necessarily go anywhere.
But I kind of think Flanagan was playing with that, you know, with the dog calling him Cujo and stuff. It was like, hee-hee, guys, look at this.
Yeah, definitely. And, I mean, that, I don't know, if there was a scene to cut, like, her talking about her dream, I could see, because it was kind of like this, like, soliloquy where she's just out of, and we didn't see the dream, so it's really just her explaining what she slept
I do
through.
Think it worked a little better in the book, because like the book you have many, many, many hours of it, so it's kind of like, oh, that's a cute little nod, and then you keep reading for like 10 hours or whatever. Mm-hmm.
I think later Gerald makes reference to something about seams between worlds, something like that. That
I thought there was something about following the beam.
That's what
or something
it was.
Like that.
Beam, not seam.
I don't remember what the context was either.
It says all things serve the beam, yeah.
Oh, that's just like a general, like, yep, that's what the universe is made on, these little beams.
It's a fucking weird turn of phrase for that culture, then.
I don't want to get too into it, because then I'll nerd out too much, but it's like, you got the Dark Tower, and every universe exists along these beams, along the top of it. So, all things serve the beam, meaning, like, any beam is like a single universe. So without the beam, there is no universe. There is nothing.
Yeah, it's all dreamy or in her head.
I mean, it's still kind of weird. Out of context, it's like, wait, what's a beam? Why are you talking? And then it's like, how does she know about the beams?
She was also reading Dark Tower.
Yeah, they just got back from seeing the movie, so.
She's like, it just wasn't that good. It's so disappointing that I'm going to die in this bed having seen such a mediocre adaptation.
So she falls back asleep. I guess at this point she hasn't eaten. This is day two. She's gotten way less water than you're supposed to get in a 24-hour period.
Right.
I think you're supposed to have like at least a liter of water a day, if not two. And if you don't, at day two, organs start shutting down. Like, it starts getting pretty grim.
I feel like I can go a long time without drinking water. Yeah. I can go long.
I feel like I should start drinking more water. I don't think I drink enough water, guys.
I drink plenty of other liquids, yeah, but not a lot of water. I've been trying to drink more water, yeah.
Well, we got to prep. I think we should drink less in case this happens to us.
I think we're taking it for granted that we don't have to
Well, but I also drink a lot of alcohol and intentionally dehydrate myself, so, you know, I'm getting some practice in there.
Intentionally sounds like you do it on purpose. Is there...
He's preparing in case he should also be handcuffed to
a
bed.
I'm preparing in case I get handcuffed to a bed in some kind of strange scenario that I don't know why that would happen.
The scenario's Necronomicon 2019, sir. We're going to have some fun.
Well, but I'll know at that point to have the handcuffs where you can, like, get yourself out of them in case your creepy co-host is trying to do some weirdness.
Is the shelf dynamic the same in the book? Because I thought that was... a little tricky as far as like the setup.
Yeah, no, I think it's pretty much exactly like that.
Yeah. I was actually pleasantly, like he stuck really, really close, like closer than I thought he even needed to sometimes. I was like, you could have cut that. I mean, but okay.
Is the nearest thing is her self. No, I guess it's Gerald's cell phone that's on the table. But I guess Stephen King would have written it before cell phones were ubiquitous.
Right.
Now that I'm thinking about it, was the phone, like even just getting the chance to plug that into a wall and dial 911, is that a better move than going for the car? Because blood loss is a serious thing, and the more you run around, the more that blood's flowing.
Use the phone first. Yeah, the phone 911 would be your first thing.
Would have had.
Yeah, but hunting around for a charger with a degloved hand is. I can barely find that thing with all the skin on.
That was gruesome.
Yeah. Before we start talking about the scene, I rarely ever have to put down a book because I'm too grossed out. And I seriously put down Gerald's Game during that, like, the beginning of it for, like, a solid day. The next day I tried to pick it up and read it, and I had to put it back down for another day.
When you say the beginning of it, you mean the degloving scene specifically?
Yes. Okay. Like the first descriptions of the skin coming, and I was like, nope. And I just threw it down.
Yeah, so I guess during her last dream, she flashes back to the family dinner that followed the night of the day of the eclipse, and like she hulks out in that moment and crushes the glass in her hand, and young her is telling her that, like, you already have your solution. It's all there. Just do it. And I wish I had written it out, but I thought the movie kind of works in terms of, like, the five stages of grief, finally sort of arriving at acceptance. And I thought, like, that's acceptance that, like, she's either going to die or she's going to do whatever the fuck it takes to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And when she sort of comes to terms, I didn't know where it was going. I had no idea that.
Which is the best way to go into that.
That scene is. Because
then when it happens, you're like, fuck no, why?
Yeah. Ooh, and it was long. Ooh, that was a long scene.
It was really, and it didn't cut away very
often. No.
So when she smashes the glass, I was also impressed that she got like the perfect piece of glass to wedge in between the boards of the shelf. And I was watching it in my apartment. Rachel knew that this was not a horror movie for her, so she was in the other room. And listen to my freaking the fuck out watching that.
So you went into the other room around the introduction of the handcuff play between the two of them, right?
Like, no, it was when the dog came in. The very first time the dog came in.
Oh, Gerald was already down. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, so later on in the movie, I later described it to you, but had I known what to expect, I might have stopped the movie and gotten a recorder because I responded pretty loud.
Yeah.
You know what? It does play to, like, the Netflix viewing that it happens in the home, because I don't know how I would have handled this in a theater full of people. Like, I would have, like, pulled my feet up on the chair and been really uncomfortable and loud and weirded out the people around me. But so you were in the bedroom in the other room for that.
I was.
And
I will preface by saying that I am frequently in the bedroom while you're watching a horror movie on Netflix. This is not an unusual thing. But this is like the loud, like, I came out because I was worried that you were not okay. It's the loudest that I think you've ever been.
Okay. Do you remember roughly what I said?
I would say roughly. Yeah.
How did that go?
Okay. Oh! Oh, no! Oh, no! Oh, no! Oh, no! Oh, goodness gracious! Ugh. It was something like that.
I said goodness gracious.
That is absolutely 100% accurate. So goodness gracious.
Thank you for that.
No, thank you.
Just the phrase you use to describe it, degloving, is bad enough.
Yeah, well,
because it implies.
Isn't that what it's called?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It is. It's degloving because you're taking your skin and you're pulling it off
so
like a glove.
Gruesome.
Yeah.
Apparently. I looked away. I looked away. I cheated. I did that kind of a thing, and I made Jackson watch it. And I was like, you just tell me when it's done. And he'd be like, yeah, it's done. I'd look, it was still happening because he's an asshole.
Well, also because it goes on forever.
Yeah. And so I was like, must be
it's
good.
It's like a solid, yeah, like.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was pretty. And I thought I got a glimpse of, like, a little bit of CGI, but otherwise, like, that was a practical effect on site.
It was,
like,
gruesome.
It was pretty gross. I, yeah, so, okay, now I was thinking, like, I think generic advice for like getting out of handcuffs is like you have to break your thumb to get it small. But with...
yeah, I thought it was you just break your thumb.
It's kind of hard to do one handed though.
Yeah,
and
right.
It works
yeah,
better like, if it's behind your back or in
yeah.
front of you.
And so then I thought like,
yeah, how do you?
I don't know. Maybe it takes like a sort of Cirque du Soleil gymnast, but to like get both feet up. And like try and
she was like not using her feet in a way that I feel like she could have used her feet much better. Yeah. Like I think, yeah, I think I could have broken one of those posts off with my feet.
There's an idea. Okay. Yeah. With the further strength of your legs.
Yes, of course. Unless she had like very weak legs.
I think the trouble and 127 hours. Wait, no. Is that the name of that movie?
The James Franco one? I don't know.
27 hours?
Lots of hours.
127, yeah.
Yeah, it's 127.
He waits really long before going for his arm. And at that point, like, probably not making the sharpest decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And in her case, it's on day three where she hasn't eaten in 3 days.
Right. No, I feel like day one I would be kicking and yeah. trying to make stuff happen. But yeah. maybe she has very weak
legs. I
mean,
I don't think day one you'd be like, you know what? I'm just going to, like, rip the skin off my hand.
It's definitely a last like, minute kind of.
Like, day one, you're like, maybe I can break the post somehow.
But she didn't, though. She never really thought, like, I should kick with my feet.
Yeah, no, she just has that, like, imaginary cutaway where she does break mm-hmm. the arm. Or
you're like, movie's over. Problem solved.
This is a Mike Flanagan short. Yeah, no, so the de-gloving follows her. And it's even in that moment, she's only got one free hand. And that hand is pretty shitty and not really useful for a lot. Mm-mm. So she's still got to deal with the other hand in the post, which I will say she, I think that one she just, what, slipped over the bedpost? How
no.
did she get the other?
She ended up reaching for the key, right? And putting it in her mouth yeah. to unlock?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That was on the table with Gerald's Viagra across into the sort of bathroom
right.
area.
But she had to, yeah, she had to drag that the bloody hand. Yeah.
Yeah. And then checks the phone, not so much, and goes for the car. And I thought, like, fancy red Jaguar didn't have OnStar? Like, that would have been my first call.
Yes!
Oh, wow, I didn't
I
even think about
that. I
had
the same thought. They're rich, they gotta have OnStar.
Yeah, I figured. But again, I don't know. We've talked about like high stress situations.
Or maybe like Alexa, call police.
Oh, if they had Alexa, this would have been a much shorter film.
It's just there. She's like, Alexa, how do you get out of handcuffs?
Calling a locksmith.
Okay, wait, one thing though. So she, like, her hand is like missing. How come she's not like immediately wrapping it in something?
She does.
To stop
she put it in pads.
She put a tampon yeah. over it.
Not a tampon.
Wasn't it?
It's a pad.
No.
A pad, rather. Sorry. That,
yeah. So, tampon right in there. Would not work for that.
She could have used something else, too. I mean, like, I don't
well,
know.
Apparently all she had was
very
that.
Well.
Well. Or just, like, taping it together or something.
But did they're sticky on the back of the pads, so she, like, made it happen.
Oh, all right.
Is that how that works? Okay.
Yeah, that's how that works.
All right. Well, mm-hmm.
The yeah. more you know.
I'd be duct taping. I'd be duct taping like crazy.
I don't think rich people have duct tape in their house. Duct tape
well,
is like a middle
tape
class
they
thing.
Have.
No, everybody's got duct tape.
I don't think so.
I mean, if you're housebroken, you've got duct tape. No?
I don't think rich people do.
I think it's even like if you don't have tools, you at least have duct tape.
I mean, it is their like summer home. It's not like they do a lot of repair there. If something breaks there, they call
their person.
Their person, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. She probably would have spent a lot of time looking for the, like, utilities closet,
mm-hmm.
looking for tape and rope.
No,
I don't know. Whatever.
Those pads were right there. She stuck them on.
Yeah. And again, not making the best decisions. But yeah, so when she does get out and crashes the car, then we kind of move into epilogue territory. And she's writing about this and she's started a group to...
yeah, she suddenly becomes a counselor, survivors. Which she's not really qualified to do. It's not like she has a degree in therapy.
Everybody just felt bad for me and let me do
it. Exactly.
That.
Like, she's been through something terrible. Well, you're qualified for this. No, you're not.
She has money. She can do whatever she wants.
That's true. No, that's true. The deciding. Because they were like, well, you don't know. And she's like, what if I throw $1 million at it? And they're like, oh, okay, fine.
Yeah, okay.
Here's your honorary doctorate. Yeah.
What she's probably not mentioning is she has, like, a staff of people that actually know what they're doing.
Yeah, with actual degrees
and
therapy.
And she's just kind of like, how's it going? Now here's the qualified person you can talk to.
Well, because she does one of those things that a therapist is, number one, not supposed to do, which is talk about themselves.
Yeah,
that's, like, what she leads with. She's like, well, you think you have it bad this one time. And you're just like, that's number one. Don't do that.
You know how hard it is to get, like, gloves off? Well, let me tell you.
Yeah. Sean, this isn't a foundation built to help survivors of being handcuffed to a bed. This is for her childhood abuse. I don't think she leads with the degloving.
She should lead with the degloving. Like, no matter what you're going to tell me, is it as bad as ripping your own hand skin off?
It's like scared straight. Just, it's one-on-one. Yeah, so... Gerald's law firm, I guess it's probably a high enough status law firm that, like, any revealing article that's like, yeah, this fucking creep, like, almost killed his wife and in the process died, and yep, that was our guy, that was our lead litigator.
His fucking dick exploded when he hit the ground. And this is his story.
That's like the headline is like, his fucking dick exploded. It's like page 9. You're like, oh, that's interesting.
We're starting a class action lawsuit against Viagra. In all the warning messages and side effects, they never once warn you that, like, don't hit the ground.
That dick's going to explode.
No, I mean, it's a general rule of thumb to not hit the ground.
Dick first.
Like,
yeah,
dick
first. I watched an episode of the Drew Carey Show. I remember what happens.
Yes, I actually saw that one.
Does he break his dick?
I haven't seen.
Yeah, he breaks his dick.
Kind of like he's got.
He like trips over his dog and lands.
I don't remember this
first.
Episode, and I watched a lot of this. Where was I?
It was like a whole like season story arc was his dick rehabilitation. I'm not.
Wait, was it really?
It wasn't a one and done gag. I mean, how do you?
I thought it was like one episode.
No, it was. He had trouble dating for a little while because he had a broken dick.
It was the broken dick arc.
Well,
it was.
I only saw the one episode when it happened, so I thought like
this is what the show's about, right?
I thought they just would never mention. No, I thought they would just never mention it again. Like it's like a Seinfeld thing.
Every episode ends with traumatic genital injury.
Mention it again. That would be an entirely different show.
I do feel like Gerald's dick exploding could have happened in canon, because in the ending here they talk about like, oh, the Moonlight Man, he stole your genitals, and she just assumed the dog did it, but what if?
No, I was thinking about it when she thinks she sees the Moonlight Man licking her toes and it's the dog. Mm-hmm. When she does kick off the dog, it kind of lashes out and bites her ankle.
Yes.
And then it, like, steps back and collects itself, and then it's kind of like, well, then fuck you. I'll just go back to eating Gerald.
Yeah.
I'll take this meal to go.
It was a good dog actor.
It was, yeah.
See, Murphy, in the middle of the night, if you wake him up by, like, looking at him or standing too close to him, he gets really angry. So he sleeps at the foot of the bed, and if your foot happens to come out from under the covers and gets too close to him, he'll bite the shit out of you. It's like he has flashbacks to apparently the NAM or something, and he goes crazy. So I could actually see that. That could happen in my life. He's definitely going to eat me.
Yeah. But, it's going to take a while, so you have time to, like, well, if you're incapacitated, you might wake up, at which point, like, your toes will be gone. I don't know. That's gross. I cat-sitted, and this was an asshole cat who would chew my toes.
Ooh. Cat teeth are sharp.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are.
They are, yes. Yeah, cats don't give a fuck. I feel like my cat would try to eat me if I was just sleeping too long. I'd be like, what the fuck? I'm still alive.
It's like the Far Side strip of the bear coming out of hibernation, but he's in a coffin, and he's like, fuck you guys, don't you take a pulse?
Yeah, that's one of the best scenes in 976 Evil. Do we got the numbers right? When they pull off the blanket and it's all the cats.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a good one.
I always told my grandma that's what's going to happen to her.
So Jesse sees in the paper that the, what do they call the Moonlight Man in the papers? He's like the crypt killer, crypt robber. But in any case, she recognizes that, like, that's the fella I saw, and maybe I'm not crazy. But she does go to his, it looked like his sentencing. It didn't even look like court proper.
It's either a first hearing or a sentencing or something. I don't exactly understand.
I just want to say, those security guys were really not on the
terrible.
Ball. They're just like, yeah, sure, just walk in towards the defendant. Yeah. Sure, why not?
It was like her wedding. She walked down the aisle.
And no one turned really
door.
To look until the
yeah,
very
no
end.
No one was like, hey, we're in court. Why are you doing this?
Yeah.
I guess up to this point, like, he's just been kind of stoic and creepy, but he, like, he melts. He sees her and he melts. He's so happy to see her. Yeah. It's like an old friend.
Well, she gave him a gift. I mean, she was like, here you go.
Right.
He's probably not used to that.
He wound up with her wedding ring. Right? Yeah. That was him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was terrific.
Because for a while she thought that she had made him up and was like, I don't know where the fuck my ring went.
It would have been great if he, like, slowly lifted his pinky up and the wedding ring was on and he was like,
Kind of, I guess that's as much closure as she needs. So she walks out of court and walks.
She said, no, she says, I thought you'd be bigger. And then she leaves.
Oh, right.
Than 7 foot tall. You thought he'd be bigger than 7 foot tall.
Well, right.
I think she's just trying to throw a barb.
Well, what she said is, you're so much smaller than I remember, which is what she said in her flashback when they got to the lake house.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
And her dad's, I mean, it's because you're bigger.
Yeah. She was essentially talking to her dad. Do they? Right. They change out characters in that moment. It's just kind of a
yeah. A point she sees her dad and her dead husband.
Oh, that makes sense now.
Yeah. She's got. Yeah. For all the, like, therapy and outreach she's doing, she has, like, a grip on her issues, and it seems pretty resolved by the end of it, but I would still recommend therapy, I think. There's nothing that can't be saved by a long walk towards the newest eclipse. Although, no one on that street was looking at the eclipse.
Also, how many fucking eclipses are there?
Well, that was the recent one. That was the timing.
But it doesn't work out like that. We can't see all the eclipses all the time. Like, well, the fuck are you?
Getting all selfish with the eclipses. What
are the odds?
Well, I mean, she was alive. She was a teenager when the first one happened.
Yeah, but so say this new eclipse that we just had, right? It's not going to go over the exact same point as the last time. So
it was also perfectly aligned with the street.
This is too much.
That's where you call bullshit. That's
bullshit artist.
She could just be. Is it, like, legit happening or is she hallucinating?
Oh.
It's hard to say.
What are we talking about, right?
Right, no. I could see that. It's just kind of like an emotional bookend rather than.
It's like an emotional eclipse.
It's
like a total eclipse of the heart.
Oh, boy.
And on that note,
I would lean
credits.
Towards it being a fake eclipse just because she's also walking down the middle of the street like the ending of an 80s comedy.
She really
is.
Yeah,
or a western. Yeah.
Yeah.
All that was missing was, it was like the jump in the air to click her heels, freeze frame, roll credits.
Yeah.
I was joking with Emily. I was like, so when are the cops going to be like, miss, you're in contempt of court. We need to grab you.
I don't know who told you
he was a good lawyer because he could probably get that thrown out as a mistrial after she stepped
and
in.
And he gets thrown out.
That's
and he's
probably
free.
True. Yeah.
I think she probably gets free law advice for life, or at least, like, representation for life.
No, but think about it. That is really bad, especially if a jury was there and she comes walking in like that. They're going to do a mistrial.
Yeah, like a mistrial.
They're going to have to do it again.
If the crypt killer gets away with it.
Because Carla Gugino had to get the last fucking thing in.
She had to look at him and tell him, I thought I remembered you being bigger or whatever.
Yeah.
Or it was, I don't remember, small or something.
I thought you were a different size than you were.
Yes.
I think the line was desk job making you weak, and then they clasp hands.
Moonlight man, you son of a bitch. And then the movie ends.
The
I think on your
end.
Note it says, then the movie ends.
Turn around. That'll wrap up this chat. So you fellas are from the Miskatonic Musings. Our listeners are probably familiar. If they're not, they should absolutely get on top of that.
Sean, you've been really, really busy lately. What's coming up with you?
He sure has.
I've been eating a lot of cheese. That's been my new thing lately, is trying different cheeses.
And I wanted to tell everybody.
No, not really.
I do like cheese.
My first novel is going to be coming out around Halloween.
Oh, cool.
Devil's Night specifically, though, I realize now people might not know what Devil's Night is.
Is it not sort of widely known?
You know what? I have no idea.
I thought it was
widely
thing,
known.
But apparently it's more widely known than I
thought.
Charles
is telling me it's a Detroit thing, and I'm like, I've heard of it, though, and I don't live in Detroit.
Well, you also watched The Crow.
But also on American Horror Story Hotel, that's when all the murderers get together.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the point is my first novel is coming out on Devil's Night in ebook. It's called The Demon. and it's from my Press McManby's books.
Nice. And that will be available on Amazon, like your
previous
works?
It'll be available on Amazon.
Works?
Yes. The ebook will be available initially. I might have the physical book available. I might have to wait another couple weeks to have that done, but there will be a version of it available for the Kindle as an ebook.
Yeah. I have a physical copy of your Hate from the Sky. I have not read it yet. I just have a copy.
Because you're reading terrible, boring French revolutionary stuff.
Yeah, it's all.
It's very different than that.
Is it the new copy of Robespierre's Terror and Valor?
One of the books I'm reading is On the Terror. That's not... Well, Robespierre was a character at the time, right?
Yeah, he was. He sort of like... I'm also kind of learning about the French Revolution right now, weirdly enough.
Oh, yeah?
Mostly because I thought, like, hey, Les Mis didn't make a lot of sense to me, so...
Should I watch Les Mis? I've never...
No.
No.
That's the best reaction, yeah.
What do you guys have coming up on Miskatonic Musings?
Oh,
a lot of B-movie talk. We make a lot of B-movie jokes.
Yeah, we got... Yeah, our latest episode has a lot to do with the Jerry Seinfeld movie, B-movie. For some reason, I don't remember how we got
Official Transfiguration Twitter was like, so glad you liked the movie. And then Charles is like, yeah, we made a ton of B-movie jokes
on
that.
The first 20 minutes
of
the episode, we were talking about B-movie, which neither of us have seen.
So how were you even talking about it?
Just,
I don't remember.
It's a cultural touchstone. So, it's like people didn't see Indiana Jones, but they know about the boulder chasing him down.
Not quite the same.
But with a bee who wants to fuck a human. Anyway, coming up, we have an episode on the Channel Zero Season 2, the first two episodes of that.
Okay.
And also, we just 2 days ago recorded our episode on The Babysitter, which is also on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. I just watched that.
I have not yet.
But yeah, okay, so people can find you at Miskatonic Pod.
Miskatonic Pod on Twitter, facebook.com/MiskatonicMusings, and our general hub on the internet is MiskatonicMusings.com.
From there, you can get us on Stitcher and iTunes.
Don't fucking step on my spiel.
Rate us and subscribe. We love it.
Sir, I've spent almost 200 episodes perfecting that.
That's true.
And you're
I flubbed it a little bit.
Sir? Come on. That was...
All right, do your thing.
No,
then.
No. You ruined the moment. They know where to find us. They know where to find us.
All right.
I had to wait until it was someone else's podcast to do that. I've wanted to do that for so many years.
All right, well, gentlemen.
It's the same spiel every time.
Is this how we're going to spice up our podcast, Barrage? This is your metaphorical handcuffing me to the bed?
This is me. I'm just stepping on your lines.
Because I'm kicking right now, sir. I did not like that.
Check your dick. I don't know where that came from. Gentlemen,
I liked it.
Thank you very much for coming on the show. This
well,
is fun.
Thank you guys
that be the
for
name
having
of the
us.
Episode? That won't be the name of the episode, will it?
No.
Check your dick. It should be, but no.
Happy Halloween. Check your dick.
Fair enough. Words to live by.
Love is like a shadow. All right. So, that's been us. This is me, Darren, signing off.
This is Mindy.
I'm Charles.
And I'm Sean.